Have you woke up late?
The void's calling.
You stubbed your toe?
Void's calling.
Estranged from your life partner because of an indescribable grief that categorically cannot be processed healthily in a time frame that doesn't have a huge knock-on effect to the rest of your life?
That's the void calling.
Those waffles that you were looking forward to at the end of the day, they're now out of date. You don't trust them because they've got egg in them.
That's definitely the void calling.
That's the void calling right there. That's the void calling. But that's right, buddy. We're getting into the grief-stricken, the trauma-ridden, the independent, Lovecraftian, eldritch horror, The Void! Woo! I'm Ben Groves.
I'm Rob McFarlane.
And welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right. What is happening in my life? Christmas. I'm at work.
I was going to say, it's an early Christmas, bud.
Well, it is, isn't it? Because we've got to start advertising at work for Christmas.
Right.
I make all the adverts.
Yeah, sure.
This is a blessedly late Christmas. Normally in music, we do Christmas in July.
Right.
We are a smaller company.
Yeah.
And it's just me. So yeah. We're doing Christmas in mid-November. They all go live next week. And so I've been editing a lot of dogs in Christmas hats.
That sounds incredible.
With lots of royalty-free Christmas music.
Sounds incredible.
How about yourself?
I mean, it's not dogs in Christmas hats, right. So that makes me a little sadder.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm doing good, man. I've got these new patches.
You do, yeah.
They're like dopamine patches. They've got like mushroom extract and stuff. Mm-hmm. They kind of trick your brain into making...
I googled them, more decided dopamine. Against it, but that's fine.
Yeah.
We live our different lives. At the least, and you've said this,
yeah,
it's a fun sticker.
It's a fun sticker. Even if it's a placebo,
mm-hmm.
I feel a bit better.
Great.
And I get to wear a sticker all day.
Perfect.
It's a win-win.
It's like you go to the dentist every day.
Legitimately.
Without having to go to the dentist.
Legitimately.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for a sticker.
I still get a little bit sad when I get my hair cut and I don't get given a lollipop.
I got given a lollipop from our hairdresser the other day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so I went, I didn't get one.
No.
You did.
I got given a can of pop and a lollipop.
Probably because he cut you a mullet and he just went, this guy knows
how
to live.
He was complimenting me the entire time. He was like, dude, the ladies are not going to be able to stay off the mullet. And I'm like, I think they will.
What are we getting into today, bud?
Bud, we're going to be getting into, who is Stephen Kostanski?
Why are we doing The Void now? Why The Void came out in 2016? I think it's more accurate, yeah.
How grief and trauma bond us all.
The ancient unknown and the indifference of the universe.
Ooh, sounds fun. What's it really mean?
What does it really mean?
What's it mean?
Let's get into what it really means.
Yeah.
This week, seems like we're not having an emotional breakdown. So instead of the emotional breakdown, let's have a little plot breakdown for those people who haven't seen this film and aren't planning to. Important.
But should.
Or people who have seen this film and want a little reminder. We're just going to take a single minute or two.
Yeah, it's a short one.
A minute.
I've made it a short one.
To just go through what happens in this film. If you want to watch this film and you don't want spoilers, that was your warning.
Yeah.
Shall we get started with Act One?
Yes.
Welcome to the worst night shift ever.
Yeah.
Sheriff Daniel Carter, legend, finds a bleeding guy on the roadside and thinks, sure, let's take him to the creepy, nearly abandoned hospital. What could go wrong? Everything.
Everything.
As it turns out.
Yeah.
Nurses start stabbing people, cultists in bedsheets, cosplay gather outside,
mm-hmm.
and the power keeps flickering, like the building forgot to pay its electricity bill. Or, I'm going to just quickly edit a note you hear.
Yeah.
Or it had a recent fire.
Could be.
Everyone quickly realizes that this isn't a normal night. It's more of a sort of cosmic nightmare with bonus tentacles, but not the Japanese type situation.
Yeah, no hentai. Act two. Please, bud, don't go into the basement. Okay, you went into the basement.
They always do.
They always go into the basement.
Stop putting your big bad in the basement.
Because
the simple fact of the matter is, if I get a little bit scared, where's the last place I'm going?
Basement.
Exactly.
But also, if we all know that the big bad is in the basement, stop going in the basement.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's kind of where it is.
Yeah.
Our heroes descend into the hospital's conveniently horrifying basement and discover that Dr. Powell has gone from sad dad to DIY godhood enthusiast.
We've all been there.
Everyone. It's a slip. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's a slip and trip hazard. Gosh.
This is what I worry about with you turning up at a church.
What's that?
You're just going to turn into a DIY godhood. I think.
You think I'm going to go to one church session and come out a cultist?
I think you're going to go to one church session. And no, not a cultist.
Right.
A culter.
Oh, okay.
I think you're going to be like, I might be Jesus. And then before we know it, like Christopher Nolan's family have been murdered somewhere in London.
And my calling card was a scarf.
Yeah. And you're just going to write sheep on the door in blood.
Amazing.
A very British serial killing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a little bit offended that you think that that's going to happen after one church thing. It might be a couple. I'm not going to rule it out. You know what I mean? Who am I? God. The place is now a labyrinth of fleshy architecture, cult science projects, and monsters that look like someone lost control of the blender full of body parts. I don't know what that intonation
you
was.
You just went Matt Berry. You went full Matt Berry there. Look, we've got to get through this. We said it was Ann Minute, and we're fucking around.
I'm sorry. I'm trying.
Stop fucking around.
Tensions rise, alliances crack, and everyone starts questioning their life choices, especially the one that involved them coming downstairs into the basement.
See,
in the first place.
We mentioned this. We did. Mentioned this. We're so good.
It's almost like we've seen this
it's
film.
It's almost like we've written this. Act three. Next stop, fucking nowhere, bud.
Yeah.
Dr. Powell reveals his master plan. It's a dead easy one. Just defeat death.
Yeah.
Open a gateway to a new dimension.
Easy.
And look fabulous while doing it.
This is what I'm saying.
Right. I got to say, Stranger Things, great show.
Yeah.
Vecna, great character design.
Yeah.
Literally the character design of Dr. Powell in this movie.
It is.
They could have at least changed something. Maybe. You know when you copy your mate's work and you get one different, you just one different to make it look natural.
Yeah.
The portal opens to a giant cosmic screensaver of despair. Monsters erupt and the remaining humans try very hard not to be turned into abstract art.
Isn't it?
By the end, characters are either dead, lucky, transformed, lucky,
isn't it?
Or trapped in an alien void, wondering if this is what happens when you try to skip therapy. And I can tell you, it is. Roll credits, cue nightmares.
That's exactly what it is, man. This whole film is a fucking nightmare. What was your... Give me your, like, initial reaction
initial
watching
reactions,
this.
Right. So I am...
This is your first time watching
my
this,
my first time watching it. I've seen one other film by Stephen Stephen.
Yeah.
And I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's a very different film.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Psycho Gorman, which is coming in a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah.
We're going to go do that one as well. But there's a whole load of 80s monster movies that I grew up watching.
Mm-hmm.
Loved and then just kind of forgot that I loved.
Yeah.
So Basket Case, Rawhead Rex, The Fly, Brain Dead.
Yeah.
Like practical effect things with like 80s monsters, by which I mean like practical effects monsters, not Gary Glitter, who was another famous 80s monster.
He was a practical, Bill Cosby's up there too now. Yeah. You know what I mean?
80s monsters like The Fly and Rawhead Rex, Pumpkinhead, that kind of thing. I've got a lot of respect for.
Yeah.
80s monsters like Bill Cosby and Gary Glitter.
Not so much.
So watching this film was a real kind of like reawakening of a love that I had forgotten.
Yeah.
It was like getting...
Well, thank God it was this one and not the other one. You know what I mean?
It was like... It was, where do I go from there? Where
I'm
do
so
I go from
sorry.
There?
I'm so sorry. You took us down a path. I'm just strolling beside you at this point. You know what I mean?
I had a lot of love for this film. We'll get into it. But I was impressed.
Right.
Especially because it wears its budget on its sleeve.
It does.
You know quite quickly the budget you're dealing with.
Yeah.
Just from like the quality of the shots and the footage 100%. And the acting. You're okay, everyone here is trying.
Yeah.
And even when they don't necessarily succeed, you go, but you tried.
Yeah.
But you tried, and so worth it.
Everything in this film is so sincerely done with nothing but love and consideration for the craft. Like, there's never a moment where you're thinking, that's just been phoned in, or that could have been better, or they don't really understand what's going on.
Oh, no, there's
here.
Loads of bits where I think that could have been better, but I forgive the film for... We'll get into that.
Okay,
did you watch this when it came out? Was this the start of your relationship with Stephen Kostansky?
So this is the start of my relationship with Kostansky. It's also the start of my hyper-focus with Kostansky. It was one of these films that kind of flew under the radar.
Yes.
I mean, it had a limited theatre run.
Did it?
Yeah. Okay. And less than 400 grand at the box office.
What's the story of this one? Because I know it's an indie movie.
Yeah.
And I know it's by this sort of beloved indie movie director, Steve Kostansky.
Yeah.
That is it.
Okay.
So I'd like to know a little bit of where this came from.
So.
Who is Steve Kostansky? Like, and where do you fall into that in terms of finding out?
I've got you. Cool. So this is going to come as a surprise. I fucking love independent weird horrors. I love independent weird movies, to be fair.
What?
So I saw this.
Do you know what? In 3 years of doing the podcast with you, I'd never have guessed.
I know.
Right.
And dear listener, you two may also be shocked, but unclutch those pearls.
You've never mentioned it.
I've never once made it my entire personality at all. I'm not sat here in a bright, luminous pink Toxic Avenger t-shirt because it is my entire personality.
Right.
At all.
So yes, you're a fan.
I'm a massive fan. This hit me in ways I didn't expect it to. I thought it was just going to be a creature feature type thing with like a bit of subtext. The fucking panic inducing weird episodes that came weeks after this, it just lived in my brain rent free. And I was like, I don't understand how these people have this much agency over me as a human person. And then I got paranoid that maybe Kostansky was the real life Dr. Richard Powell.
Right,
and that I was wearing the bed sheet. I had the triangle on my face, and I was ready to be teleported. You know what I mean? Like, this is what it is. So I'm going to give you a brief history of Kostansky. Kostansky started out making stop motion home movies when he was a kid.
Okay,
he got into makeup, prosthetics, art department,
yay,
working in movies. started doing that like on big movies in 2005.
Yeah, I only say gay because I'm incredibly jealous.
Oh yeah, same. Like, dude, he's incredibly talented.
When I was a kid, a treat for me was like a bit of electronics in the house would die.
Yeah.
And I'd be allowed to take it apart and pretend to be a repairman.
Oh, 100%.
Or I'd find a VCR in the lane behind the house and I'd be like, ho ho, TV repairman time.
Yeah.
And then I'd like take all the bits off and then I'd be like, oh yes. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah.
The idea of having an camera.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Right?
I remember going to the hairdressers as a kid and unscrewing all the screws underneath one of the chairs just because I used to carry a screwdriver around.
Was there a thing when you were a kid of, we used to call them hubcaps, but you'd go around and you'd take the protective sheets off all the air pump nozzles on the...
Air caps.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there were obviously, I know now that hubcaps are a different thing, but when I was like 12...
Yeah.
You'd go around, you'd be like, look how many hubcaps I've got.
And that'd
be like, that'd be the coolest guy. And there's just drivers going around going, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. Mate, you'd be like a millionaire if you found like, you know, one of those people that were really proud of their car and they had like the little metal dice ornament things once. Jesus.
That's too rich for my blood. We never had anything like that.
Oh, we used to go over to the good part of Telford and take the decorative ones. That's a weird thing to say out loud.
It's an odd
hobby.
That was our childhood.
I'm really glad that someone else did that though. I just thought it was me and my next door neighbours. It was just fucking weird.
No, it's apparently a thing.
Okay.
But the idea that my mum was like, right, what I've done is I've bought you an 8mm camera.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go Nicolas Cage with it. Go stop motion.
Sure.
Here's a whole of Ray Harryhausen movies and some clay. Off you go.
Yeah. We'd be living different lives.
We would be living different lives.
Instead, I've got 144 hubcaps in my fucking bedroom drawer.
Debt.
Yeah, and that's just from the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So Kostansky started making these stop motion movies as a kid. And then in 2007, co-founded a Canadian film production group called Astron 6.
Right.
With a few mates. They were mainly known for making like low budget 1980s inspired indie movies, mainly like horror comedy type stuff. I found him through The Void, which blew my entire tits off.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Triggered a super intense hyperfocus where I went through his whole filmography, starting with Manborg, which was his first feature and is incredibly dear to my heart because we will do it at some point.
Right. Why haven't we? Why haven't we started with Manborg?
It's difficult to get hold of.
Right,
so
okay.
If we're talking about a film that like 11 people have a copy of.
Right, okay. Well, I mean, we did that. So we covered Japanese Spider-Man.
We did.
You can still watch that
on
our Discord.
And on our Discord, yeah.
So if you join our Discord, there is a little group called Bonus Content. And in there, if you scroll all the way up, it's the full copy of Japanese Spider-Man. And it is... It's like getting the flu and trying to sleep whilst watching 90s animated Spider-Man.
Yeah, everything's out of proportion.
Everything's a fever dream.
Yeah.
Everything's slightly unwell and entirely insane.
So it's that times 40 and you get Manborg.
Right, exactly.
It's incredible.
Okay, so maybe we put it on the Discord. We'll see.
It's got a distributor.
Oh, then
absolutely
let's not,
not
do that.
Yeah. We'll get to it at some point, but it's a different story to tell.
Fine.
And it's a more important story, but I think we'll hit that point
That was like his first, like he was just fully just made it himself.
First feature, him and his mates, Astron 6, they all got together, put together a feature film. The effects are super DIY and homemade. the creatures, obviously it's half man, half cyborg.
Right.
But a cyborg is half man, half robot.
Yeah, okay.
So it's like...
It's a quarter robot.
It's quarter robot, but it's incredible. so you've got this kind of, like childlike innocence and like a nostalgia glaze mm-hmm. over his films, right? And The Void hit me very similar to you, where it was all the creature feature
yeah.
moments from childhood. Tremors was a big one.
It feels a little
one.
Bit like Assault on Precinct 13, Fuck the Thing.
Yes, exactly
it's
that.
It's got that John Carpenter, 100%. Like early Carpenter feel of like, oh wow, everyone's doing everything themselves.
Yeah, yeah exactly, yeah, that's yeah. what it is. And this film, The Void, it's sort of, I took it at face value to begin with, which was great because it does have like layers of subtext that are like readily available. But then for a couple of weeks after, there was just sort of like a sinking feeling where I would fall like a layer deeper.
Right.
And a layer deeper. And a layer deeper.
Yeah.
And it's just, if you're looking for it, this film's fucking laced with subtext.
Okay.
And it's gorgeous.
I wasn't.
Okay. I've got tons of stuff.
So you're going to have to tell me because I was like, oh, yeah. Fun creature feature.
Yeah, yeah.
With like a bit of sad.
Well, I was trying to do it in like a fun conversational way, but I'm just going to have to read an essay later because okay, I started writing and then couldn't stop. And then when I did stop, I was like, oh no.
That's what I did with Truman Show. I was again. Like, oh God.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bad. But you've seen Kostanski's work before.
Yeah, Psycho Gorman.
But you've also seen his work before he started directing.
What?
Have you ever seen the Philip Seymour Hoffman movie, Capote?
Oh, ages back. Yeah, I watched
Kostanski
it once.
Kostanski worked on that in the makeup department, prosthetics okay. department.
Okay. I have to say, I fucking hated that film.
Okay, I loved it. I watched it recently and it was amazing.
I need to rewatch it. I probably watched it when I was a bit young.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's about an American journalist. This will be interesting.
Yeah.
And it was like watching dry paint.
It's mad that you thought that as a young person.
Right, yeah. Seymour Hoffman, he's an incredible actor. Unfortunately, yeah. He worked with my least favorite director very commonly.
Just Paul Thomas Anderson. Mm. I love that guy.
I know, everyone does. It's just me. I'm fine with it being just me.
Yeah, fair, okay.
I think he's dull.
I'm going to save the best till last. He worked on the Hannibal TV series.
Oh, sick!
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff in there. He worked on the Suicide Squad movie.
The Suicide Squad or Suicide Squad?
Suicide Squad.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Worked on that.
Cool.
It, the new one.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I'm going to save the two best for last. Resident Evil Retribution.
Oh, classic.
I fucking knew you'd love that.
Fucking classic.
I know you'd like that.
Dog shit, classic trash film.
Yeah.
Most fun you can have of an evening is watching the Resident Evil franchise go from bad to worse to worse to worse to the power of nine worse.
Right. Sure.
My favorite thing about those movies is because I'll binge watch them over the course. I'll watch do like three
a night.
I
don't understand your film choice in the slightest.
What I love is that a film will end with a massive apocalyptic climax.
Yeah.
And then the very next film in the series will start again and recap the series and leave out all of Act 3 of the film you've just watched and pretend it never happened.
Yeah.
Incredible.
It's fucking
stupid. Incredible
work. I can't stand it.
I love it.
I think it's because I really like Resident Evil though. Do you know what I mean? So like,
for me, it's not a Resident Evil franchise.
Yeah. So if it I've gotten over Resident the fact Evil, it's called I'm that. Golden.
I've gotten over the fact it's called that. You haven't.
I hate it. They also worked on Pacific Rim.
Hey!
There you go. Thought you'd like that one.
That's okay. I love this man.
There you go.
Specific rimming is one of my favorite things.
There you go.
Except for the second one, which we pretend didn't happen.
Yeah, we'll just ignore that one. But this is where this series comes into its own, right? He's got such a fucking huge rap sheet. I've whittled it down to what I consider to be Kostanski's three big movies that hit me in a certain way.
Beautiful.
And allow me to tell this story.
Okay.
They've made like big impacts on me personally in weird ways for the stupidest reasons. I adore them for it.
Right.
We're going to do more in the future, but I think they're better saved for when we hit moments in our personal life that will resonate with what's going on.
Better
with what's going on. So Kostanski, that's him.
Beautiful,
that's him.
Beautiful man.
Prosthetics man. So we're going to get into why The Void now? You know what I mean? The overarching theme of the episode. Why The Void now? We're in 2016, but why now? So it's written and directed by Stephen Kostanski and Jeremy Gillespie. Jeremy Gillespie also worked on Pacific Rim as a graphic designer.
Okay.
So you can thank him for all the visuals. There you go.
Good man.
There you go. The Void 2016 steps away from the usual horror, comedy, goofy horror type stuff that Astron 6 normally do.
I was going to say, because what I was expecting was that.
Yeah.
I was expecting like a little comedic, satirical twist.
This is why I've started.
Because I've seen Psycho Gorman. 100%. So I was like, well, this is going to be a love letter to a bunch of cheesy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And have its tongue firmly in its cheek.
Yeah.
And when its tongue was firmly between its teeth, I was like,
This is all to come. So I've started here because this is where they stepped away from the horror comedy stuff and they wanted to do the Lovecraftian Eldritch serious horror. They wanted to do like a genuinely scary movie. And the way that they did it is they just looked at stuff that scared them.
Nice.
And were like, we could do something like this. So I've got a little quote here from Kostansky. Talking about when him and Jeremy were coming up with the idea for this film.
Yep.
So Jeremy and I were hanging out a few years ago around the time that we were making Father's Day, which is also a great movie. And we were lamenting about how we would rather be making something else. Jeremy was throwing around the idea that something that took place in a hospital, as he likes hospital imagery, as that kind of stuff freaks him out.
Ooh.
We can both relate to that.
Yep.
So we started rifling through hospital movies, talking about hospital movies that we like, such as The Exorcist 3, Hellraiser 2, Halloween 2. You see the influences?
Yeah, 100%.
Out of these kind of spitball sessions where we would throw these back and forth, then things slowly started to generate. It was always an idea on the side, but then we eventually decided to kind of move forward and develop it. And the way they did that is Indiegogo.
No.
They had a budget from
They must have made production company. They must have made something as filmmakers beforehand as well. They must have invested some of their own money.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So they had some budget, and then they were
some budget,
and then they went help to get more.
Yeah. So the budget that they were given doesn't cover creature feature stuff. No, so course, the actual creature effects are quite expensive, mm-hmm. and most production companies are like, that's the money for the film.
Yeah.
Use it as you wish.
Yeah.
There's no separate bits. They went on Indiegogo. They crowdfunded, I think it was $82,000.
Jesus.
And that was it for the creature effects in this film.
I mean, don't get me wrong, okay? Mm-hmm. Depends on the context, right? Yeah. How much is $82,000?
Mm.
For raising on Indiegogo,
yeah.
That's an awful lot.
Yeah.
For doing practical creature effects, that is fuck all.
That's fuck all. Yeah, exactly. And they managed to pull this out of the bag with that.
Which is
insane.
You see it. But yeah. I'll come to why that's less of an issue for me later.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting the Lovecraftian element. I thought it was going to be a sci-fi element. I thought it was going to be mm-hmm. the thing set in Canada.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's Event Horizon set in Canada.
Yeah.
Which it was always going to win me over.
Yeah. Do you see why I've started with this one?
It's supernatural, but not ghosts.
Yeah, 100%.
And it fucking hates you. I'm like, oh, mint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, it gets bigger than that though. And okay. I've got a whole thing for it. And I don't know whether I'm going to ruin your day or make your day. Depends on which side of the fence you're sitting on today. I'm very much on the one that's going to ruin my day because of my dopamine patch, which may or may not be a placebo, but it is a sticker.
Nice.
There you go.
Do you want to try and get sponsored?
Kinda.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, which would be amazing.
I don't, because I've read different parts of the internet about them.
That's fine.
But I'm not going to share those with you because it's working.
Yeah, fuck them.
Yeah.
If you're done with people, that's cool.
Yeah.
What'd that void do? We're going to get into the grief trauma, how loss binds us all in the void.
Right. The void, the film, or the void, the place.
Mm.
Oh, God.
In it.
Oh, is that where we're going?
Oh, in it.
Right.
Yeah. So this is why this film hits me so hard. First, I need to break down a few characters because every character's arc in this film is paralleled with every other character through grief. Every single character has experienced a grief or a loss or a mm-hmm. bereavement or some sort of trauma in their past, which has made them susceptible to the void's influence.
Yes.
Which is why Dr. Richard Powell is using specific people to do specific things at specific times.
On specific rim.
And it's fucking horrendous.
Right, okay.
Horrendous. So, Sheriff Daniel. And Allison, the nurse,
mm-hmm.
they are married. They suffered the loss of a child.
They did. They'll turn up.
I doubt it. But that's driven them apart.
Yeah.
So now there's a big sort of like emotional gap. There's guilt on Sheriff Daniel's part.
Yeah.
Now the guilt could come from a various few situations. Guilt that he couldn't do more. Guilt that he couldn't offer any sort of solution to an issue. Or guilt of the relief that flashed across his face when it happened.
Which Dr. Powell mentions.
Which Dr. Powell then brings up later in the film.
Which I think I always think is unfair in moments like that, because I think this is unrelated to anything. But I always think there is an element when there is death around.
Yeah.
It's usually not sudden. It usually takes a while.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if it's an hour, which feels very sudden, there is that awful period where you're like, which way is this going to go? And you don't know.
Yeah.
And then when it goes the bad way, there is that element of like, well, okay, at least it's not actively.
At least it's no longer a question mark.
Right, exactly.
Right.
So I think everybody, I remember when my grandmother died, there was that, I mean, she did take her fucking time about it. But
Jesus.
We didn't get on. I was raised by her. She was a chronic alcoholic and an emotional abuser. So it was.
This has gone a very. I thought this was going to be her last words were, what were you doing with that pillow type thing?
No,
sorry.
But it was an odd one because obviously, if you don't like a family member, you still love them.
Yeah, of course.
And in my head, there was these sort of first 16 years of my life that were incredibly traumatic. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, one day we'll sit down, we'll hash it out.
Yeah.
There'll be that great closure moment. And then we can move on, because I do love her.
Yeah.
And we'll move on. And then she's just in the bed, unconscious, but very actively dying. And you're like, bitch, got away with it.
One upped it again.
And then you're there being like, I don't want you to die because I very much love you.
Yeah.
But you have robbed me of any closure for 15 years of awfulness.
Right.
And then I'm getting a bit better. And the doctor's like, she's getting better.
Yeah, yeah.
She's getting worse. She's getting better. For 2 weeks.
Right.
And then when she died, it was like, that sucks. But also,
like, at least you know which way it's going to go.
At least you know which way it's going to go.
Processing, right?
And I always think everyone feels that around death, at least in a small 100%. Part. And it's something, sorry, it's a complete tangent.
No,
something that we just never recognize.
No,
like it's okay to be a bit relieved.
It's okay to be relieved that you know exactly what the situation is
right,
now.
Exactly.
And it's no longer looming over you like, what the fuck is going on?
Right.
I agree wholeheartedly.
So, you know, sorry. To no, trauma fine. Dump. Their thing is that they lost their child.
Yeah.
It's not in the sofa. It's gone. And they are now recovering from that, separated, but still
estranged,
still amicable.
Thing. And they're both trying to figure out how to deal with it in their own ways. I think Sheriff Daniel goes one way. He's got a very sort of like cold, hard demeanor now. I don't think it comes from a place of callousness. I think it comes from a place of not having time or the wherewithal to process healthily. And then you've got Nurse Allison, who throws herself into her work, obviously being a nurse. So she's feeling abandoned by Daniel. She could be using her work as like classic coping mechanisms. Emotional avoidance, just focus on nothing but work. But then her work and her career is helping people. So it could be sort of like a desire to make sure that no one goes through what she went through, which is a, you know, noble thing, but ultimately emotional avoidance and a distraction, right? So we've got those going on. We've got Dr. Richard Powell, who we learn that he has trauma from the death of his daughter.
Does, yep.
And this is...
I mean, he does keep banging on about her.
I mean, he mentions it twice.
A number
in the first act.
In the first act.
Yeah, but in the end, he kind of has to, right? It's the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Fair.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think this is the most extreme case of grief sparking an obsession that I've seen in a long while. And this is why it fucked with me a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I'm like, unchecked, that shit can run.
right.
That shit can run.
There are examples of like grief being sweet. Like there's a lady who goes to Baker Street once a year because they change once a year for one evening.
Mm-hmm.
They change the announcer of the platforms and the trains coming in back to her deceased husband's voice because they've still got the files. So he did the announcements for like the next train coming and she'll just sit on the platform and just listen to him chat for a while.
Yeah.
Incredibly sweet. What she's not doing.
I wish you hadn't. You should have given me a warning on that because that's caught me right off guard. That is. That's one of the most gorgeous things I've ever heard,
isn't it? But what she's point is what she's not doing is summoning Cthulhu to raise meat monsters.
We don't know
on
that.
The Piccadilly line,
not on that day when she's sat in a train station. No. What's she doing for the other 364 days, Rob?
That's
she
true.
Could be reading books, she could be finding out what the void is and find out how to have a chat with it. Oh, what, you just need sad people to come into a basement? Fucking yeah, easy. I just can't do it next Thursday because I'm in Baker Street, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then we're good. So he's refusing, Dr. Richard Powell is refusing to accept the death of his daughter, and he becomes convinced that death itself is a flaw in the universe, and his grief eventually festers into a need to control over life and death.
Yeah, He's going to conquer death.
He's going to conquer death. And we've been here before. I love Reanimator. It's a whole trope in horror movies that I adore. I'm going to conquer death. And it always goes very fun.
Let's fight nature is a common theme from Jurassic Park to Reanimator to The Fly.
100%.
Let's break some natural laws.
Yeah. But this obviously drives him to try and find an answer in cultism, grotesque experiments, and eventually transformation into Vecna 8 years before Vecna.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'm not lying, am I?
No, it is.
It's like one for one.
It's almost one for one. I think Vecna's a bit more red.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's it, though.
It's a palette swap.
Yeah. There you go. So he starts trying to mess with reality and starts trying to complete this ritual to fulfill a promise made by a voiceless, faceless, careless entity that is like, you can have a back.
If it's even an entity, it's just
a thing.
The void.
The void, yeah.
We don't know if it's a space or a thing or or a lore or what. Yeah.
That's it. So we've got Maggie, the pregnant girl.
Yep.
She is in hospital with her granddad, Ben.
Yes. I was going to make an abortion joke there, but I decided not to keep it.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Jesus Christ. So her main trauma is probably the most unsettling one, in the fact that she's been manipulated by Dr. Powell and the cultists to become a vessel for the resurrection of Powell's daughter and then sell it like it's just a normal average pregnancy. Which brings up this whole thing as well of the trust in the group and the trust in the characters that we meet, because is she a plant by Powell to be there at that exact moment, and then whoever and whatever comes in, the guys being chased cultists, are they all being herded to one spot?
So I don't think it's that.
Okay.
I think the because the film starts with the police officer finding some survivors of a prior event.
Failed ritual. And then
end up there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I think realistically, Dr. Powell had everything he needed in the hospital if no one turns up, because he's got Kim.
Sure.
Who was jarringly looked like one of my ex-girlfriends.
Which one?
You wouldn't have met her. It was the one, do you remember that girl whose house I set on fire by accident?
Yes.
Her from Plymouth.
Kay.
Yeah.
Right, I've heard this story. Yeah, sure. Yeah,
I'll tell it again for Patreon later.
That's fine. Yeah, we'll talk about it later. Okay, interesting. But Maggie's like fully brainwashed and sold on this premise that after Powell's full transformation into this fucking being, the reality is going to set in that everything is golden and all good. This is exactly what her purpose is. This is what her baby's purpose is. She's a divine being.
Yes.
For a holy resurrection, right? And then in the final moments before the birth, she asks Powell to bless the baby. And she has these horrific visions of what is actually happening and is snapped out of it and has the most existential breakdown, huge freak out, what the fuck am I doing? And then just explodes into a monster.
Yeah.
Which is objectively fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah.
Fantastic, but also harrowing to really sit and think about, right?
The film, the reason I didn't find it harrowing is because the film doesn't invite you to think about it. In the moment, no. So as a watch.
Yeah.
For your first time.
100%.
Most people are going to watch this and go, fun creature feature.
Definitely.
With some woo-wah.
Definitely.
I think...
Some woo-wah.
With some rose quartz thrown in, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think if you go through and think about it, how would Kenneth Branagh direct this?
Wet. You'd make everything wet.
Yeah.
And the vessel would have been a massive tube.
The film would have been just her.
Yeah.
You know, if this was an A24 movie, they'd be like, get rid of the precinct and the hospital and everything and have it just be about her, and it would be Saint Maud.
Saint Maud's a good film.
Oh, fuck you.
It's a good film.
It's aggressively edgelordy.
Nah. I've watched it again recently, and I agreed with you briefly on the first one. I'm going to die on this hill. I fucking loved it. Super fun.
It's
again unchecked.
It's
that shit
mental health rubbernecking.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
What if crazy people were really crazy? Oh, aren't crazy people crazy?
Split's
fun. Split's fun.
Yeah.
It's not a morose drudge through someone's fucking delusion.
Right.
Going, let's look at craziness from the crazy person's perspective. I'm like, you can do that over there. I'm fine.
Split does do that. But it's very fun.
Split's fun.
We're not looking at it from Anya Taylor-Joy's point of view because she's been kidnapped and locked in a fucking basement by a man lady child who's all in one body.
Yeah. Split's a superhero movie. That's great. Split's a superhero movie and I'm down for it.
St. Maud's a superhero movie.
St. Maud's a fucking navel-gazing, fart-sniffing fucking...
We need to watch it together. I'll make it fun, I promise.
All right, fine.
And then the last person that I've commented on here is James. He's the runaway. He's got PTSD from being groomed, abused, manipulated by the cult, and it's those guys trying to complete their rituals.
Yes.
He now can't be trusted because of all of the fucking trauma coming to the surface and him stabbing someone in the neck.
Yeah. Also, you know, he's into meth, and like you can trust a meth person to do one thing.
Yeah.
And that's whatever they need to get meth.
Yeah, 100%.
If I was the police officer in this situation, mm-hmm. I would have pretended I had some meth.
Right.
And I'd have been like, you get the meth when you do what I need you to do.
Sure.
The old,
but you haven't just shot Beverly in the face. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, true.
You just shot Beverly in the face, who you were a dick to 10 minutes ago.
That's the thing that would stick with me. Not the shooting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The rudeness.
This is it now. You'd be like, bitch has got one up on me again.
Fucking hell.
I fucking hate Bev.
I've missed my moment for closure.
This is why I was a dick to her, but now I can never make it right.
I can never make it right. I've missed my moment for closure.
All of this is wrapping up really nicely.
15 minutes of trauma.
You know what I mean? The void is calling.
It's almost like we wrote this show.
Mad, isn't it? So, with this train of thought and all the trauma and all this stuff that's bonding these people together, they're all in the same situation. They're all they're doing their fucking best. But we can see that the void is feeding on emptiness, loss, and a desire to escape the grief.
Yeah.
Not a desire to process the grief.
No.
Or deal with the grief.
Yeah.
Because that would be a healthy human that the void has no interest in or doesn't care about. Mm-hmm. Not that it cares about you this way. It's just easier.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The next bit of this is going to be an odd one because I started writing and then I couldn't stop writing.
How about you go just and occasionally interject. I'm just going to throw in some random thoughts that I've had.
Do it.
To break you up a little
100%.
Bit. 100%. I'll derail.
Derail.
I'll be the derailer.
Derail. Please, that's your job.
I wanted to grow up to be a derailer.
There you go.
Derailer.
That Pixies reference.
Yes.
That Debaser reference.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Which is also a Salvador Dali reference.
That is nice.
To the film Enchaîne Andalou. It's all movies on every movie ever podcast.
There you go. We don't discriminate.
Off you go.
Right, so essentially this is a fucking... It's just a log that I've
written. Yeah, you start.
Right, you ready?
Yeah.
So in the void...
That's interesting. Let me interject.
Yeah.
So... No.
Okay, I was waiting.
No.
Okay, that's fine. So in the void,
yeah,
the tragedy isn't just that every character is carrying grief. It's that their personal suffering unfolds in a universe that is so utterly indifferent to it. It does not care whether you're suffering, striving, surviving, thriving. It just, you are you.
Right.
And it does not give a fuck.
We've brought this up before. There's a book by a French writer called Albert Camus called The Stranger.
Mm-hmm.
I read it at the right age, but also the wrong age. I was a wee whippersnapper.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about a Frenchman shooting an immigrant on a beach because he's just in a bad mood.
Right.
He doesn't know why. He doesn't know why. He just does it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a very short book. It's a couple of chapters of people being like, why did you do it? And him being like, I just don't really know.
Don't know.
And in the end, he gets sentenced to death. And as he's on the gallows, he looks up at the stars. And the quote is, and he beholds the benign indifference of the universe.
Yeah.
That like a man has died and he's about to die. And the stars up there don't care. None of this matters to them.
Interesting.
And reading that as a 14-year-old, I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Whereas I imagine you watched this and had the exact same thing. Yeah,
exact
yeah,
same
yeah,
thing
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where I was watching these people who are desperately trying come completely undone.
Yeah.
With no one giving a fuck about
no
it.
No one gives a fuck.
And everything just carries on like normal with no explanation or nothing. Just it minimizes the human experience to an atom.
It takes very deeply emotional stakes, huge life events of on a human scale. You know, the loss of a child is a trauma that I certainly would never be able to get over. I don't think many people can. I think it's something you learn to live with, and I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy.
Mm.
Everything that happens to the characters in this film before the horror kicks in are things that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy.
Yeah.
And the film just goes and shrink and shrink and shrink and until it goes from being the full screen
to
being, it's not even a pixel anymore.
It's just a triangle.
Yeah. Okay. Fair point.
See?
Fair point.
So Sheriff Daniel Carter begins the story already cracked by the loss of his child. Isn't this weird? It's almost like this essay is feeding exactly into your derails. I like this. This is going well. Good job, Ben and Rob. It's a wound so deep that it's left him just drifting through life. He's searching for meaning that the universe refuses to give him. His grief feels enormous to him, yet in the film's cosmic landscape, it is just a tiny flicker swallowed by an ancient darkness that does not care whether he heals or breaks. Allison, his estranged wife, tries to cope through work and rationality, but the uncaring universe erodes these defenses just as easily. Her attempts at control collapse the moment the hospital's reality begins to warp. Now, the hospital's reality is a different being, which brings up some philosophical questions, which is going to be like, does trauma affect the way that we perceive our reality?
Absolutely, it does.
It does.
Yeah.
It distorts the world around us. Mm-hmm. We see things in a different way to everyone else.
Would the void be the void if it wasn't our doctor interacting with it?
100%. If we're both stood at the end of a corridor, you have had the worst month of your life. Absolute devastation, nothing going on.
Yeah.
The corridor is long, dark, difficult to get through, full of obstacles.
Yeah. Whereas when you're on meth,
when you're on meth, it's worse. When I'm on a hot streak, I'm looking at that and I'm going, this is a fucking quick, easy breeze down there, straight through the doors and I'm out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's the same corridor.
Yeah.
It's just the perception that's getting fucked with.
Speaking of which, I'm glad that I don't have anyone who perceives me the way the elder policeman greets our protagonist.
Right.
It's such a hot entry.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's just like, our protagonist, the young sheriff, brings some wounded people to a hospital and there's some freaky goings on.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, he shoots a nurse in the face.
Right. But before that, the elder policeman just turns up and he's like, you're a real piece of shit and your dad would be disappointed. What's happened? And he's like, I've shot someone in the face. He's like, for fuck's sakes. And I'm like, I'm really glad that nobody's going around just meeting me and going, oh, you're right, mate. Your dad must be disappointed in where you're at. That's a wild way to start an interaction with somebody.
Yeah, it's rough.
But now you're talking about the void, you know, the creator of all things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think dad is disappointed.
I think
the void
either.
Is like our dad's and simply doesn't care.
Simply does not care.
Which is worse.
But I also think the void has a slight influence on negative thoughts and emotions and feelings. So when someone comes in and is like, I've worked with your dad for decades. He was a stand-up
sheriff.
Yeah,
yeah.
Also, never shot a nurse in the face 5 minutes after being in the hospital.
But then that's because his dad never was never greeted by a nurse peeling her own face off with a scalpel and coming at him.
Mm.
So like, or
stealing,
context.
Stealing someone's eyeball. You know what I mean?
Stealing an eyeball.
Yeah, it's a good one. May is another good film for someone stealing an eyeball. Just putting that one out there.
Frankenstein.
There's a lot of good stealing eyeball movies.
We should do a little mini series.
Is that a series?
That's a series.
The stealing eyeball series.
Yeah. Right, eyeball thieves.
All right. And then there's Dr. Richard Powell. The clearest example of someone confronting the universe's indifference and refusing to accept it.
Yeah.
After losing his daughter, he becomes consumed by the idea that death is not a boundary, but an insult. Something he can fight by tapping into ancient forces older than the human existence itself. But Powell's obsession only reveals how insignificant he truly is. The void he reaches out to is not benevolent, it's not compassionate, not malicious. It simply is vast and unfeeling, and it reshapes him without hesitation. But it offers an answer to a response. Is it the one that he wanted?
Ooh.
No one gives a fuck.
That's
you
incredible.
Asked the question, I gave an answer.
Deal with it.
You're welcome.
Yeah. That's incredible.
So this is just tip of the iceberg stuff that sits with me for a week. Right? And it fucks with me on a level that I can't explain. And the fact that Manborg creators have this much agency over my emotional well-being fucking annoys me.
That's fair. It's an incredible point and it's an incredible analysis of the movie. I'm like mum proud.
Thank you.
I'm like, hi babe. I've got some issues with the film.
Okay.
Is now a good time to air them?
Get them. Let's get them.
The monster at the end is a monster that has had to share $82,000.
Yes.
And I feel like some of the practical effects got perhaps more of the $82,000.
They had to.
And they had to.
Had to.
It's a classic example of the sort of filmmaking whose loss of popularity was a stunning blow to the amputee community. Because you know when people like lose a hand and then they go on to play zombies on The Walking Dead?
This is a weirdly poignant point that you're making.
Well, I mean, you got to think about the loss of 80s practical effects in monster movies.
Yeah.
And the loss of practical effects was a stunning blow to the amputee community. You could say it really cut them off at the legs financially.
Yeah,
and
100%.
This brings it back. There's a number of people you're like, you should have an arm there, but you don't. And that now you've got a job.
100%.
Being a blob creature on the floor.
I'd give a limb if someone approached me and was like,
do you want to be in a Stephen Kostansky movie?
100%.
Let's tweet him.
I spoke to him briefly on Instagram and then I asked him if he would ever consider doing a quick interview and then he ghosted me.
We should hit him up. We should release this and hit him up.
I think after Frankie Frico, but before we get to Deathstalker, because he's just remade a Deathstalker.
Yeah, we need to do that because I think that's going to be quite big.
It's going to be amazing.
But you should just text in the link, little winky face,
yeah,
and then hey you up? Question mark.
All right.
The amputee horror basement of old victims and morph creatures.
Failed experiments from Dr. Powell.
Is incredible.
Insanely good.
It's feature film, it's AAA, it's quad A gaming, right?
Yeah, 100%.
It's an Ubisoft title.
It's tip top tier.
Right. And then the monster,
hated saying that,
happens tip top tier.
Yeah. It's the worst.
The main monster happens and it is somebody on all fours with a lot of shit on them. If you've seen Tim Robinson's I Think You Should Leave,
it's that
I can very much imagine someone going, I'm too hot, you put too much shit on me, I don't want to be around anymore.
Yeah.
In fact, Tim Robinson's sketch on I Think You Should Leave is the quickest way to get the exact same emotional resonance that The Void costs. There's too much shit on me, I don't want to be around anymore.
Yeah.
The shit on you means you don't want to be around. I don't know.
Yeah, kind of. But that kind of sums up every monster in that basement. They don't know why they exist.
Yeah,
they are dead people reborn.
Who can't die.
Into these fucking absolute creatures. They're trying to kill themselves.
Yeah.
As soon as they enter the one room, there's that one fucking corpse that is just slamming its head onto a metal pole.
Onto the end of a pole.
And it's just
drilled through its head. It's still not alive.
And it's
still
fucked.
It's still dead, yeah.
It's fucked. It's so good.
I was wildly impressed.
Yeah.
And then the final monster came out and it looked like an animated laundry pile. And I was like, okay. But here's the thing.
Sure.
I forgave it because one of the things that practical effects can do that CGI simply can't.
Right.
Is because there's an inherent amount of effort to just get there.
Yeah.
I know it looks like an animated laundry pile.
Yeah.
But I know that there is a person in there.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there is a person who's made that prosthetic.
Yeah.
And so I give it the benefit of I understand what it's trying to depict.
Right.
And go along with that. Because I understand that somebody has tried.
Yeah.
And the fact that it doesn't look like that is because it couldn't for budget reasons or this reason or that reason. It's not a fuck up. It's a limitation.
Not.
And I'll forgive a film limitations if they're budgetary. And I look 100%. At it and I go, okay, rather than being scared by that, I will imagine how that was supposed to look and then carry on watching the film.
Okay.
So, and I don't mind it because it then becomes charm.
Exactly.
It's indication of a limitation they couldn't get around, but they just did it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And they could have solved it by not showing the monster or blah, blah, blah. Yeah. It wouldn't have been as satisfying.
It would
not. I get that that's the most satisfying it can be at this budget.
Yeah.
So let's carry on. I'm on board. Great.
Mm-hmm.
If it had been shit CGI, different.
Oh, whole different.
Completely
thing.
Different.
Then it's Alien 3.
Right. Well, I think District 9 has ruined indie movies being allowed to have bad CGI.
Okay.
District 9 was made for fuck all money on home PCs.
Yeah.
So, like, you can do decent CGI on a budget.
People can.
People can.
People can.
And so then it's just like,
I can't.
Speak for yourself.
You know what I mean?
I know how to use GIFs.
That's
I could
cool.
do Birdemic.
Yeah. Sound. Sound. The thing that I love about it, the problems that you've just raised are perfect, right? Because what you've said entirely sums up why I love the movies that I love.
Mm-hmm.
So to you, the creature that shows up, it looks like a disused laundry pile,
yeah,
been reanimated.
Yeah.
For me, it is just an amorphous blob of organs and
it's bits, yeah,
viscera,
yeah,
that commands a respect, not just on camera, but it commands a respect for everything that goes into that.
Yes.
And for me, I can look at that, and if it isn't as scary as I would have liked it to be, I can suspend my
exactly
disbelief enough so that it almost morphs into my worst fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
Because I know that someone has poured their blood, sweat, and tears into
it. It's that. You respect the effort.
100%. It commands a respect. I've never seen an 80s creature feature full of practical effects where I've like...
Yeah, exactly.
Could have tried though.
It just becomes charm.
Exactly. That's what it is. And the void is chock-a-block.
Going forward, I think that's Kostanski's kind of superpower. Is he really highlights the charm of something that isn't quite sold.
So the next Kostanski movie that we're doing, we're going to do three movies. Mm-hmm. We're going to do The Void for mm-hmm. this one. We're doing Psycho Gorman and we're going to do Frankie Freaker.
Yeah.
Those three, they progressively get more nostalgic, right, more charming, and more ludicrous as okay. we go on. But I have meanings for all three.
Nice.
That hit me in wildly different ways.
Okay.
Some are more fun than others.
Good.
But we'll get into that at a point. And this is the birthplace of Kostanski's charm that made me fall in love with him.
Amazing.
And we'll get into his earlier works at some point when we hit a certain threshold in our lives.
So what's it really mean?
I'm glad you asked.
Right.
I'm glad you asked. So Dr. Powell's attempt to conquer death and rewrite reality, that shows to me the danger of trying to force meaning onto an indifferent cosmos.
Right.
While the cult, the mutations, and the void itself represent an ancient, unknowable power that exists far beyond human understanding.
Right.
Ultimately, the film isn't just about monsters or gore. It's about this fucking horrendous idea that the universe is so vast, so uncaring,
yeah,
and so incomprehensible, and that at the end of the day, our deepest wounds mean absolutely nothing to the darkness that surrounds us. We are so fucking small.
Incredible.
In the vastness of the universe that exists.
Yeah, you've nailed it.
It's terrifying to sit and think with that thought.
I mean, I
it's easy to get caught up with the characters' traumas and situations.
You are 100% right. I think there's also some subtext in there about Chinese commercialism. Just because, remember in Django Unchained?
Sure.
Where the KKK all get together.
Yeah.
And they have a fight about the eye holes in the masks.
Yeah, of course.
In this film, there's an awful lot of cultists.
Yeah.
Who have got very well sewn together.
They do.
Cult robes.
Yeah.
That are looking at, they don't look Timu.
They don't.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they have all got them at relatively quick shipping.
I mean, this is assuming that they're shipped.
It's not going to be someone in the community with a sewing machine. There's fucking 50 of them. And it's the void.
50 of them that we see.
I feel like Dr. Powell, mm-hmm. I feel like Dr. Powell would be like, let's get some robes to really, you know, cult this up.
Right.
And then they'd be like, oh, well, do you mind where we get them from? And he's like, my whole thing is I literally don't care.
Just like the Heaven's Gate thing where they're like,
right,
should we get all the same shoes?
Right.
And then they're like, yeah, Nike are pretty good.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I think it's just an arbitrary, someone's gone on to like Timu or Shein.
Right.
And they've just been, oh, I've got 100 cult uniforms here for 50 quid.
It's amazing.
No, you are right.
Just drop ship an Alibaba order.
Drop ship like an Alibaba order. They've got four shapes. They're like, you can have circles, you can have squares, and they're like, circles are going to look weird.
Yeah,
circles are going to look weird.
It's an umbrella, a circle, a square. Yeah,
exactly.
But we can't rip off Squid Games.
Right, exactly.
It's coming out in 10 years.
Right. No, you're 100% right. That indifference, that cosmic horror, they've nailed it perfectly.
It's disgusting.
And one of that sort of coming back to the sort of, well, not the birthplace, but the perfection of the genre was with H.P. Lovecraft.
Mm-hmm.
And that sense of suddenly realizing that everything you thought was real and mattered just doesn't.
Doesn't matter.
You're going to be hard-pressed to find a film nowadays that does that as well, with the exception of maybe Annihilation.
Annihilation,
I think, is a crueler film.
It is, much
because
crueler.
It's a bleaker film.
It is.
Whereas at least in this film, we have characters that end up in the void, but the final shot is them holding hands because they are together. and that sure. sense of the film saying you can face anything together. Mm-hmm. If that isn't a spoiler for whatever I'm going next week, what is? Just before we give you all our final, definitive, often controversial all-time rating of this film,
yeah,
which will then consign it to the dustbin of history or forever into the Hall of Heroes, because we are the only voice on the internet that matters, fuck Mark Kermode, shall we see what the lovely people on the internet have been saying about us?
Yeah, please.
Well, I've got a weird one.
Okay.
Because we've tried this before.
Right.
And it hasn't worked.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask for the listeners' help. I feel like our little cult,
mm-hmm.
we've got a lost sheep.
Okay.
Because there's a guy called right. Craig Jameson.
Yeah.
And Craig Jameson, no matter what we post,
mm-hmm.
is fast off. And he comments first.
Yeah, yeah.
Or sometimes a couple of flame emojis, right?
He's super, he's rapid. He did it last night. I posted right. it at like fucking 1 a.m. and he's the bang. First comment.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, straight away.
But we know for a fact that he doesn't listen to the show. Because on a previous episode... We said,
"Oh God, yeah,
Craig, we're talking about you."
Is he still not listening?
Can you comment second on something?
Mm.
And he hasn't. So now, what I want to do, dear listener, is I'd like to employ peer pressure. And if
hell.
Next time you see Craig Jameson post, can somebody just in a vaguely shocked accent,
yeah,
in how you type, just go, "Oh my God, it's Craig." Did you hear what they said about you this week?
That's kind of genius, but also kind of mean.
Right?
This is, you're the void in this situation, right. man.
Just if another listener, it can't come from us.
Right.
If one of our other listeners could just reply to one of his comments and go, "Oh my God, did you not hear what they said about you last week?
Oh my God, it's Craig. I know you.
I know you." But that kind of thing, make him feel like we've yeah. said something terrible in the episode
right.
this week. So that when he gets here, we can just say, "Craig, thank you.
Fucking love you, buddy.
Love you, buddy. Thank you for commenting on all our stuff. Yeah. You do genuinely do God's work, and it does help get our stuff out there. Commenting on our stuff is like a huge deal for the algorithm.
Oh, massive.
You do that all the time. We've got other listeners that do it, but you do it the quickest.
First. You do it first.
You do it first.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we're sad you don't listen to the show. So listeners, help us bring this lost sheep to the show. He'll be in Triangle Robes before you know it.
This is a really nice comment, apart from the triangle robes. This is a really nice comment corner.
One
I like
choice,
this.
One choice.
I like this.
That is Comment Corner, gang, and we would hope it's obvious how you can get involved and maybe hear us dive into your thoughts about the movies that we're covering.
Yeah.
Just find us on social media of choice.
Just fucking send us anything.
Send us anything.
Send us an email. Jesus Christ.
Everymovieeveruk@gmail.com.
There you go. I didn't remember it. Thank God you did. What are you rating it?
This for me is a 8. It's a very good film.
Nice. That's higher than I thought it was going
to
be.
No, it's an 8. I think it sets out to do
yeah.
what it wants to do. It does it well. It doesn't necessarily speak to me the way it spoke to you.
Okay.
But it's a good time.
Yeah.
It's a good time. Celebrate an 8.
This is what makes a fucking great movie, though.
Yeah.
You don't have to go looking for the fucking existential crisis that comes for the 2 weeks after, because I'm fucked now. Thank fuck for my little sticker.
There you
my
go.
My little dopamine patch sticker.
There you
that
go.
That may or may not do something.
It's got glue on it, and that's what holds you together.
Hey, it sticks to me.
There
I've
you
got
go.
A sticker. That's the be all end all, and that makes me feel better on its own. If it's doing anything, mint.
Perfect.
If not, sticker.
Sticker. What are you rating it, bud?
This is an 8 for me.
Oh.
It's an 8 for me.
Lower than I thought.
Okay. So it's because I know what's coming next. So the next...
You always do this.
I know.
You're always
I
like, it's not as good a film as it is no, because there's another film that
this
exists.
Is, okay. This is a fucking objectively insanely good film. It's made with love, care, blood, sweat, mm-hmm. tears, and it's just oozing in charm and passion.
Very much oozing.
It's free on Amazon Prime right now. So
go
you
watch
can watch it.
It
for free whenever
yep.
you're convenient to.
Yep.
You know what I mean? The next film in the series is Psycho Gorman, which is probably
in your top three of all time.
Top three of all time.
Yeah.
Like, has to be.
Because
it is just... It brings up so much shit from so many different places.
Boy.
And it just balls it all together in a delicious, gorgeous little package of
hunky
purple
boy.
Fucking gore and hunky boys.
Yeah.
It's delicious. It's an incredible movie.
Fine. Okay.
So I know where we're going. This is a fat 8 for me. There we go.
Nice.
There we go.
Nice.
But that's it. That's all we've got, I'm afraid, guys. Thank you so fucking much for hanging out with us. We love you dearly. From the bottom of our hearts, please reach out. We are going to have a little chat on Patreon now.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you about the time I burned a girlfriend's house down.
That sounds terrifying.
I'm slightly overselling it.
Okay. Well, that sounds fun. Slightly. That sounds more fun.
Yeah. But yeah, that's on Patreon. It's a quid.
It's a quid-ish? Quid 50?
Yeah, I think.
Well, it's no, a quid 50?
Exchange rates have gone, haven't they?
Yeah, exchange rates are weird, but also the app's different. I found that out the other day.
Fine.
Thank you, Josh, for telling me that.
Nice.
But it's a quid or a quid 50.
Perfect.
Depending on what's happening.
And we love you all. Thank you for hanging out with us. Now, to thank you for hanging out with us.
Oh, I wrote something for this week.
Spending an hour of your week with us, especially at the start of the week. We know a lot of you listen on a Monday. We see the numbers.
Yeah.
So Ben is going to help you get through this week. He's going to give you a little Monday motivational pep talk.
Yeah.
All about the void, the themes and subtext of the void. He's going to turn that into a Monday motivational pep talk while I tell you to just consume.
So as we see in the void, when the hospital's lower floors descend further and further, they melt into like a terrifying nightmare labyrinth. Like the grief and trauma both have the power to mold reality and change your perception. So I think the motivation is, if you are in the thick of it and your world is being warped, you're not in it alone. Help's available in fucking ever-expanding ways. Different avenues. Please fucking reach out. You may not feel like anyone cares, but I fucking care. Love you.
Ah.
That's the first one though. I wasn't trying to be a dick in it.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to be a dick.
Oh, well, we're doing that again.
Yeah. I'm trying.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Stickers.
Dopamine
stickers.
Fucking stickers.
You know what I mean? It works. Fucking works, I'm telling you, man.